Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 299, woohoo, of Her Perched on the Precipice, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her aging. Yeah, boy, have we got a terrific show with one of my most favorite people ever. Before we begin, just know that the episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Okay, now here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show because, honey, I want to hear from you. All right, your feedback, love it, love it, love it. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about Her.
Oh my heavens. What is going on out there with our redefining what the aging process is really all about? When I think about this, and especially as I look at new narratives and trends and what happens to people, especially after the age of 50, honey, if you're 20, listen up because it's going to be happening to you. There's only one person I would run to, and that is my guest, Dr. Ken Dykewald, who happens to be a wonderful friend as well as a colleague. Over the past 40 plus years, Ken has emerged as North America's foremost visionary and original thinker regarding the lifestyle, marketing, healthcare, economic, and workforce implications of what he calls the age wave. Oh my gosh, if you want to learn more about that, just go to agewave.com. There are books, there are blogs, there are events. Just hop right on top of this because this is a real mind blower, and Ken is here to do that. He's a psychologist, a gerontologist, and best-selling author of 17 books on aging-related issues, including Body Mind, Age Wave, The Challenges and Opportunities of an Aging Society, Age Power, one of my most favorite, How the 21st Century Will Be Ruled by the New Old, and the one that he's got out now, Body Mind, Age Wave, The Challenges and Opportunities of an Aging Society. Ken, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Pam, it's so great to be connected with you again. Nice to hear your voice.
Oh, my God. Okay. So everywhere I go, I see you quoted. And first, we're going to just take this little moment to say, what is this age wave? What is this really all about?
Well, there's a couple of components to it. One of them is the fact that more and more of us are living longer and longer and longer. I know this is going to sound a little jolting, but medical anthropologists now tell us that throughout 99% of human history, the average life expectancy at birth was only 18. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody passed away in their 18th or 19th year. What it means is that very few people live to see their 50th, their 70th, their 90th birthday. Very few people got to grow old. And it was the breakthroughs in the 20th century that you're so familiar with, Pam. Public health, sanitation, antibiotics, self-care, surgical capabilities. And all of a sudden, with every breakthrough that came along, somebody who might otherwise have passed away gets to live another 5 or 20 or 50 years. And so we're living in an era now where living to 80 or 90 or even 100 is becoming commonplace. Second, you know, as though that's not enough. On top of that, there was this crazy thing that happened after World War II. The birth rate had dropped to an all-time low during the Depression and the war, Then the boys came home, and 92% of all women who could have kids did, and they averaged just under 4 kids each. And so 10,000 babies a day, everybody's heard this story, you know, 4 million a year for 18 years. That baby boom has been kind of migrating across the lifeline. And those same rebellious, clever, quirky women and men are now turning 65 and even 70 at the rate of 10,000 a day, 4 million a year. So this combination of longevity and this massive bulge of people, and what I'll add to the top of that, just to kind of let you guys see the way it looks to me, is that people just don't want to grow old the way their grandparents did. You know, when my grandfolks reached my age, they were pretty well thinking they were ready for, you know, go off the playing field and kind of wind it up and wait for their batteries to wear out. Today, we see, you know, people running for president at 77. We see people starting companies at 80, folks training for marathons at 95, folks falling in love, perhaps if they've been widowed or divorced, at 60. And so there's a whole, in a sense, like a third age emerging, where because of this vitality and because of this longevity and because of the nature of we boomers, people don't want to kind of roll over and play quietly dead. They want to stay alive and reinvent themselves. And I think that's what we're going to be seeing more and more of in the years to come.
I am so excited by all of this. You know, it's interesting. Ken Cooper, as you know, is the head of the Cooper Institute and has been a dear colleague and a friend of mine for years. And when I wrote my book, Fit to Live, I interviewed him. And I'll never forget it. You know, he is Texan and he's got that fabulous accent. And I said, talk to me, Ken, about this word retirement. And he says, Pam, I'm telling you right now, it is not retirement. It is refirement. You refire, you reinvent, you keep it going because this is going to be different. We're redefining what's going on after the age of whatever, 60, 65 and more. We're healthier, we're more vibrant. We have more science and research and information about what it takes to be healthy. I'm on the board of the Senior Olympics. I'm also a competing Senior Olympic triathlete. And the average age is 68 of them. You have to be 50 or over to be able to qualify. I'm here to tell you, honey, none of these people is sitting down and taking this quietly. They're out there and many of them have never competed in their lives until the age of 50. And they just decided, hey, you know, I'm going to reinvent myself, mind and body, challenge myself in a new way. And next thing you know, we have 500,000 of these people training, 10 to 11,000 people qualify for the games. And you watch these people, it's just mind-blowing because what they're saying is, if you're not on my side, get out of my way because I'm plowing through. There's this new attitude. Have you seen this, Ken?
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned when you were kindly introducing me, Pam, I got interested in this kind of aging thing when I was 24 in 1974, which is 46 years ago. And I turned 70 this year, which to me is kind of bizarre in the first place. But yeah, you know, if you looked in Webster's Unabridged Dictionary a few years ago and looked under the word retirement, the definition, it says to disappear, to withdraw, to go away.
Now, oh, God.
That might have been what some people wanted to do. I mean, I think for our moms and dads or our grandparents, the retirement was sort of like the vacation they'd never quite had in their life. You know, it was a chance to play some golf, which is great, or kind of clean up the house, and that's fine too, and a visit with family, terrific. But that's just not enough for people today. And I do want to say, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on your show, I think the women are doing it even better than the men. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that, you know, guys are dying about 5 years younger than women. And they don't take very good care of themselves, and they've got more rigid personalities. And so when they transition into this stage of life, they just get all cranky, a lot of men. On the other hand, women are biologically superior. They're going to outlive men. They're far more flexible in terms of shifting from who I was then and who I can be next. And I think they're also more supportive of each other. It's much more likely that you're going to see women, I think, in the future at 60 or 70 or 80 running for political office, becoming entrepreneurs, you know, rehabbing and reinventing their bodies. And, you know, I was on a phone call yesterday with an interview, and they asked me if there were any futuristic sci-fi movies that captured the future. And I said, well, there was one back in the 1980s. And the person said to me, oh, you mean the Jetsons? And I said, no, Golden Girls. You know, here you had these four women who were deciding they were going to live together and have a life, you know, and look
you
after each other.
You go Betty White.
Yeah, man. Betty White. And there's even a mom in the mix. And so I think you're going to see more and more empowered women. And I think that guys seem to be fading in their later years, but women seem to be rising up. And I think that's what you're just going to see more and more of in the years to come.
You know, women are also much better at tending and friending. They really are. I think it's a little bit inherent, but I think men don't tend to maintain a lot of the very strong connections the way women do. I think women, I mean, men do, there's no question, but I just think that they tend to like to go solo a lot more than women. And so when you have something like, let's go to a place like the isolation of the pandemic. Look, we're talking, you and I, today in the midst of a global viral pandemic. This has affected everyone's lives in a big way. We're looking at how men and women either thrive or not so much in this type of a challenging environment. Let's go to the retirement place. Now, this is interesting. If I just look at my own brethren, a new study just came out of physicians. And physicians now are doing earlier retirement. They're planning on retiring next year already. They would not have done this earlier. Many of them have had to completely reshape how they live their lives. Their incomes have been hit in a big way as well. And they're looking at, well, you're seeing a lot more people being pushed into early retirement because of the constraints and the new requirements that are associated with COVID. What have you seen with this whole issue of, and again, I'm only saying this word retirement, I'm saying you're leaving your current position, but I don't know what you're going to become next. I'm not assuming at all that you're going to sit on your behind and, you know, hit golf balls all day.
Well, let me mix it up a little bit, because my company, AgeWave, we've just finished a massive study of 9,000 Americans and Canadians from five generations to see how people are dealing with their lives in this COVID experience, having to do with their health, their finances, their relationships, and their purpose. And let me just give you kind of a bird's eye view of some of what we saw. First, we saw that, interestingly, while older people, particularly very older people, are far more vulnerable with regard to this novel virus. As it turns out, older people generally are doing better than all the younger age groups. And you might say, well, how can that be? That's not what we see on television. We see older people, you know, in nursing homes and they can't visit their family. Yeah, and that's pretty crummy. However, the average older person in America, let's just say no longer working, they've got some safety nets. You know, on the one hand, you know, if they lose their job or they stop working, they've got health insurance. The average single older person gets $18,000 a year for Social Security. Now, that Medicare and Social Security are not going to make you rich, but the 30 and 40-year-olds that are losing their jobs or who've got kids at home, you know, and the kids are hurting because they can't play with their friends, they don't have any safety nets. In addition to that, our study showed that older people have more resilience, you know, and our TV shows and the ads, there's a whole lot of focus on how cool it is to be young. But right now, young people are hurting. They're getting the wind knocked out of them. I saw a survey last week that the average age of all of the creative directors in America who work for advertising agencies is 28, and 89% of them are men. So the perspective of a 50 or 60 or 70-year-old is not being portrayed. We're not getting the real deal. The truth of it is that many older people, I'll take myself as an example. You know, I've been to lots of rodeos in my life. You know, we've had two kids. We've been through some ups and downs. I've had successes, failures. I was with my dad the night he died, and my mom died in my arms 3 years later. I've got a lot more wherewithal than my kids do, who are in their 30s. And so all of a sudden, we're beginning to see that there's this sort of upside to aging, that older people, they may not be as young and fresh as the young folks we see in the ads, but they've got more emotional intelligence. They've got more resilience. They've got more firepower. I want to add to that, to a point you just made, that it seems that women also have more fluid identities. You know, I've been a mom, I've been a caregiver, I've been a corporate vice president, I've been a teacher. Guys often define themselves principally by their job. And so as they grow older, even though society gives a lot more glamour to older men than older women, I get it, we're very ageist and sexist in our society, but a lot of older men just can't find themselves in their later years. That, you know, I used to be a this, and now I don't know who I am. So what we're seeing is this blossoming of a stage of life where, in a way, people have to reinvent themselves and discover new purpose. And sometimes people really find themselves in their grown-up years, even better than they did when they were young. And there's one other thing about what this COVID experience, there's so many things that it's taught us, but I think a lot of older people are starting to think about what's more important, being youthful or being useful. And I think a lot of older people have found that find themselves irrelevant. And there's a tendency to blame society, but the truth of it is, last year the average retiree watched 48 hours of television a week. And so what most older people in America are doing today is not much of anything for other people. And people are very uncomfortable, you know, saying that, but hey, I'm in that generation and this is my field. I think we need to step up more. I think we need to get more fit healthfully. I think only 50% of older people in America exercise and eat a healthy diet, even though almost all of us know we ought to be. Very few of us are really concerning ourselves outside of our own family with the lives of young people. And I think it's really time to see a new kind of a grown-up, caring, loving, kind, thoughtful, experienced people being more involved in our families and our community. So I think this age wave will have its upside as well, but it's going to require that people step up a little more than they've been doing.
Ooh, I love the way you've challenged, you know, people who are at least 60 and over. And the stepping up thing, I absolutely, completely applaud you for saying that. You know, plus there's a win-win in here. Come on. We're older, right? And so we have wisdom to share. We can mentor, we can model, we can teach at multiple levels. We can be of service. It will enhance our sense of meaning and purpose in life so that you can, you know, waking up in the morning, why are you doing that? You know, what is the purpose? Why are you having that healthy breakfast and that extra exercise? It's not just an all about me thing and a self-centric thing. You want to be able to have a healthy mind and body so that you could be of service and share with others. We have really strong research, and I'm sure you've read this, Ken, that shows when people volunteer, when they are of service, they actually live longer. And it's not just lifespan, as you know, it's health span. They tend to live a life that is more robust, more vibrant, and they're able to inject into it a heck of a lot more happiness and joy than people just wake up in the morning and they're all self-centric. You know, did I get in my 100 abdominal crunches? Did I? Well, what is the purpose? Keep going back to purpose and meaning in life. I want to be there. I want to be used up by the end of my life. You know, seriously, it's so cool. I want to be used up. I want to be all over the place, you know, and to really touch as many lives as I can to help. Because you know something? I'd love it if people did that with me too. It's a give, you know, give and take. And it works really, really well. What do you think about that?
I'm with you 100%. You know, I there's 3 points you make that I want to lean into from my own perspective. One of them is you make a really important point about the difference between lifespan and health span. So I've given talks now, I know it's going to sound crazyville, but I've given talks to 2.5 million people over the course of my career. So that's like a lot of talking to people. And one of the things I often ask is, hey, who'd like to live to 100? And usually, you know, I don't know, 80% of people will raise their hands. But if you say, no matter what, most of the hands go down, because people don't want to just live a long life if they're suffering, if they're struggling, if they've got dementia or cognitive loss, or they're a burden on their communities and their families. And so I think what we need to focus more on is not just how do we live a long life, but how do we take our health span and match our lifespan? How do we get our brain span to match our lifespan so that at the age of 60 or 70 or 98, we can still play with the young people. We can still go back to school if we wish. We can still put in a day's volunteering or work if we've got an appetite for it. I don't think our healthcare system has paid very much attention to either prevention or helping people who are already older reach their optimal levels of well-being. And I also feel, you know, Pam, you know, you know, your career has been so amazing because you were really kind of the pathfinder in this whole, you know, in addition to all your graduate degrees and your medical degree, you've been sort of a crusader for decades and decades now. I think that a lot of us just kind of keep our fingers crossed and hope that something bad doesn't happen. I have found that as I've grown older, I need to step up my yoga practice. I need to improve my diet even further. I need to work out a little bit more. And by the way, the benefits are fantastic, but I think you just can't sit back and keep your fingers crossed and hope that everything works out. It's the same thing with purpose. A lot of people, you know, when we're 20, we decide what we're going to be, and then we roll through it, and then it's time to kind of wind that up. And we don't take the time to think about, okay, who do I want to be next? And what kind of friends do I want to have? And what role can I have in my community? And you may also have some chops. I mean, you might have been a school teacher, and now you've got all kinds of skills about teaching and kids and programs. Or you might have been a bookkeeper, but you've always loved volleyball. Maybe you could be coaching a volleyball team. Or maybe you're interested in astronomy and you want to go back to school. I think partly the benefit we have, Pam, of this longer life is the possibility of kind of reinventing ourselves again, finding a new version. You know, the image that I have in my mind, it's sort of like when a caterpillar gets old, it doesn't become a feeble old caterpillar. It hunkers down and it turns itself into a butterfly. And I think that whole idea of transformation is something we all ought to give a little bit of thought to, because there may be even a better version of ourselves waiting on the other side of the chrysalis. And I do think, you know, I hate to get too COVID specific here, but you know, it's as though the whole world has had a near-death experience, you know? All of a sudden, everybody on this planet got to think a few times this year, whoa, the life I've been living, I think, just ended, you know? And somebody I love may die. I may die. And, you know, my grandma may die. And it's made us all kind of stop and think about what was the life we were living coming into this, and when we come out of it, how do we strengthen our immune systems? How do we live with more purpose? How do we push aside a lot of the superficial things that we spend a lot of money on and a lot of time on? Maybe we don't need them anymore. And so I think what's happening is the chance for not only reinventing ourselves as we live longer lives, but perhaps coming out of this horrible experience and trying to be better versions of ourselves.
Oh my God. I just, amen, brother, to everything you said. And I'm just going to pluck a couple little gems out of that. The first thing is, honey, you got to work it. You can't sit on your behind anymore. Oh, okay, fine. You did that when you were 20 and thought you were getting away with it. Newsflash, you were supposed to have been building a strong foundation throughout your life for mind and body health. All right. And so then all of a sudden, you know, we do this crisis oriented, oh my God, I'm 50 and I'm a train wreck. Is it too late? Well, of course, it's never too late. But, you know, another news flash, it would have been a hell of a lot easier if you were already entering your 50s in pretty good shape, because you already are going to have challenges anyway that are just plain age related. And so, you know, you want to be at your best, but it doesn't matter. I don't care how old you are, you could turn this sucker around. But I got news for you. Here's a requirement. This is an absolute critical requirement. It's non-negotiable. I am speaking, you do not listen to me, kind of a situation. And that is, you have got to put in the work. You just do. After the age of 50, you know, to your point about the fact that most people didn't live beyond the age of 18, big joke is, you know, when people said, wow, how did women handle menopause 100 years ago? They never made it.
Right.
You know, they never made it to the menopause years. You know, they were just sort of happy to cruise through the 30s, and that was like a big deal. I mean, too many things were getting to them. And so really, at the end of the day, you know better than anybody, Ken, because you were an early adopter and you were one of the earliest of people who were really interested in gerontology and the study of aging. Well, if you look at what the National Institute of Aging has stated, and if you actually look at what happens physiologically to the human body was actually built for obsolescence after the age of 50. That's why we start stooping forward. That's why all of a sudden everything is heading south. You know, women know this more than anyone. And it goes on and on. And so if you are truly going to live beyond the age of 50, then you got to work it, because it's going to take more work. Your body's like, wait a minute, I thought we were like kind of, you know, cruising down to a little slow stop here. And you're saying, got another 40 in me at least. And so if that's true, there's no sitting on your behind. You got to work it. That means you do have to be, you know, someone who says, okay, here are the critical deal breakers. Got to do these. Number one, I'm going to be taking that walk every day or doing whatever kind of aerobic you are based upon where you live. Number two, I am most definitely keeping up with my physical strength, which, by the way, is extremely important, especially after the age of 70. Because as of the age of 70, I don't care if you're an Olympian or who you are, you're going to be dropping some muscle mass. That's an age-related phenomenon that's across the board. Now, if you have a better muscle mass to start with, then when you do drop a little bit, we call it sarcopenia, when you do drop it down a little bit, then you're coming from a higher place, so it's no big deal. It's not like it's going to make a huge difference in your life, but you got to plan about these things. You got to know about them, got to work it. The same thing goes with nutrition. You know, sitting in front of, you know, Netflix for 900 hours a day and doing nothing else with your life. Come on now. You know, where are we going with this? Think about it. And you said so beautifully, the rewards are priceless, and they're just countless, because you'll actually be there to play with your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. You're going to have that robust life in a big way. And I got to tell you, my last little, you know, story, very brief. So when this whole COVID thing really started hitting, all along, you know me, and you said it, I've been ranting and raving forever. Would everyone please get up and just assume the vertical and just flip and go outside and take a walk, you know, just enjoy nature and whatever. And I'm always by myself with my two beloved German shepherds. Oh, well, you know, there it is. Then the COVID hit, and all of a sudden, everybody and his brother's out there. And I was laughing my head off going, hey, what's going on? I called up all my colleagues. You know, I just got elected to the board of directors of the American College of Sports Medicine. So we all commiserated. We all called each other going, hey, what's going on in your neighbor? I said, they're all out there. Who are these people? And the joke was, one, they read the headlines, and the headlines said the safest place to be is outdoors. And they were right. And the number two was that, hey, if you're overweight, and if you're unhealthy, and if you got that, you're rocking that type 2 diabetes out of control, and you haven't done anything about this to take care of your health, you're at extremely high risk to pick up this infection. Boom, they're all outside walking. So I got to say, I mean, is that happening where you are too?
Yeah, you know, and I will say one thing, Pam, studying aging in older people now for 45 years, I'm quite amazed at how willing the body is to rehab. You know, I've seen people who haven't done anything, and they start walking, or they go to the gym, or they show up at a yoga class, and or they tune into something online, and before you know it, they're feeling more flexible, and they're standing up a little taller, and they're sleeping better. Even at the age of 50 or 70 or 90, you can make a better version of yourself. And so you don't want to overdo it on your first couple of attempts, so you don't want to hurt yourself. But yeah, the body is very, what was the god Proteus, you know, who could reshape and reform. The body is very willing to become healthier as we get older, if we give it a little bit of love and attention.
Yeah, there's no question. The body forgives. I just love those words. The body does forgive you for all your sins. It's like, you know, where have you been? But you know what's really cool is if what you're doing to rehab and to recover is natural, it's not something forced and stupid. Like, you know, you don't take someone who's been a couch potato and say, I want you to go out there and, you know, run a 5K. That'd be asinine. But if I said, would you walk around the block? Sure. Body's like, bring it on. I've been waiting for this forever. Because it's a natural, wonderful thing. When the body says, hey, feed me a little bit, it doesn't want that nasty processed stuff. Listen to your body when you have something wonderful like that, you know, really healthy meal with whole foods and no processed dreck in it. Then you can kind of sit back and say, listen to yourself, plug yourself into yourself. And you know something, I'd love, if you could just tell us, what is the first stage of life? What is the second? And you're coming into the third.
Yeah, let me, thanks for asking that. And it is, it does tie in. My 17th book, as you mentioned, was just published, and I was happy to see that it immediately shot to Amazon's number one bestseller in retirement and also business marketing. It's called What Retirees Want, A Holistic View of Life's Third Age. And I also have a public television special that's going to be beginning at the end of this month called Life's Third Age. So you can look that up and find your local listings as to when it'll be airing. But here's the idea, that more and more historians and philosophers and psychologists are realizing that there are three ages to life. The first age is, let's say, 0 to 30. And the primary purpose is, you know, biologic development and, you know, establishing who you are and, you know, what kind of people you're going to belong to and your social groups and so on, and figuring out a little bit what you think you might have as your career. And then you have your second age, 30 to 60, and that's a lot about family management, and that's a lot about work. And then most people usually were done with life. What's emerging now is a third age, from 60 to about 90. And that's a period of time for reinvention. It's a time for new freedoms, both freedom from, you don't have to raise your kids anymore for most people. You may not have to go to work anymore. And also freedom too. You can try to play the piano if you used to love that when you were a kid and you gave it up. Or you can decide you're going to write a memoir, even if only your grandkids will be the people who read it. And additionally, there's a growing sense in that third age that one ought to leave a legacy, that there ought to be something about what you do with your last decades of life that's the best of you, that helps others, that's kind of a giving back. I'll give you one example of this. Last fall, I was speaking at a conference, and the other speaker was Harrison Ford. And I had never met him before. Obviously, you know Han Solo, big male TV actor, success story. And he gave a speech about the climate. And there were about 1,000 folks in the audience. And at the end, he said, we've got to get all the young people of America planting trees to save the planet. And everyone cheered. And then I had a private meeting with him. You know, at first I told him how much I'd liked his characters and so on in his movies. And I said, hey, you know, are you aware that there's 68 million retirees in America and nobody's tasked them with anything? And worldwide, there's 1 billion retirees right now and nobody's tasked them with anything? What about if we got older people planting trees? And think about the meta message, to have older people planting trees in whose shade they might never sit. That's a missing piece of our human experience right now, that older people could be doing more for younger people and for the future. And so I think this idea of a third age is not only a time of having more freedom and a chance to reinvent yourself, but also maybe thinking at a higher level about what your ultimate purpose could be as a human being. And so, yeah, and that's why the name of the book is, you know, the subtitle is A Holistic View of Life's Third Age, because I think that's what's unfolding before us right now.
And you're defining it, Ken. That's Brian. What's so exciting. I mean, you tell me that I'm a, you know, maverick in my field, and I've been defining. Well, you are too. That's one of the reasons why, you know, I just reached out immediately when I saw that whole issue of the third stage. No one talks about that. Somehow you just sort of hit that, the end of a stage two, and then you sort of, as it were, just like the dictionary said, you disappear. you just go, bye-bye, you know, you recede into the wall. Instead, now is the time to really pick it up, pick up the pace. I almost feel like, you know, I always look at, and sorry about all my years of marathoning, thank God those are behind me. I'm a triathlete now, I'm much smarter, that I've always looked at the marathon as a metaphor for life. You know, and it's an interesting thing. If anyone's ever done anything like this, you wrap your head around each of the challenges. It's like 4 hours and change of a wild and crazy experience. And I look at, quite frankly, you know, this stage two is reaching mile 20. Now, mile 20 is kind of interesting because, you know, when you hit mile 20, you're like, please, God, is this over yet? And you just want to kind of sit down and whatever. No, you have another 10K in you, darling. You got 6.2 in you. And so you have to have a little conversation with yourself and you reset. And guess what happens? You reset and you refresh. And despite the fact that you just kicked out, you know, 20 miles, despite that fact, what ends up happening is that you end up, you know, reframing everything. And you say, okay, let's do it. And then you have this extraordinary rush of energy, all because you sat down in your mind and you reframed it all. And you said, honey, listen, rock it on. We're going to have the best time. And that's what you have to do. So, you know, what happens is a physician, Ken, I listen to a lot of people who feel helpless, hopeless, and defeated with the physiologic changes that are taking place in their bodies and the challenges that may also be occurring as well that have to do with medical conditions, physical disability, et cetera, et cetera. And I say, you know something? That's part of what happens. It's part of the narrative. How are you adapting and adjusting? How are you doing that? How are you showing resilience, which is what it's going to take to really be able to reframe and live through that stage three, as you say? What do you think of that?
I completely agree with you. And, you know, you and I share a friend, very special guy, Augie Nieto, who was the inventor and creator of Light Fitness, all those exercise bikes and technology. And Augie's got beaten down by Lou Gehrig's disease, but his spirit still soars. And when he could still talk, and he can't any longer, I interviewed him. And he said the same thing you just said. He said, watch people who are running a marathon. What do they do when they realize where the end is? They step up their game. They speed it up. They run their best. And so this idea that when we get older, we're supposed to kind of fall apart and be less than we ever were, I think we got to replace that with... Now, let me also be real. It's, you know, we hurt a little bit more when we're older, and you don't have some of what you had when you were younger. But when it comes to purpose and intelligence, and by the way, free time, I figured this out when writing this recent book, that the boomers are going to have 2.5 trillion hours of free time to
Woo-hoo!
Fill over the next 20 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we'll have more time affluence than humans have ever had before. And the question is, do you want to fill that time with things that matter or with things that don't matter? Do you want to be a healthy version of yourself or do you want to be in pain and struggling? And a lot of it is up to oneself. It's also a part of a community. It's also partly society. I understand. It's not just what an individual does. But we have a lot of ability to improve our situation. And I'd like to hope that the people who listen to your show are the kinds of folks that are thinking, you know what? I've got a mom who I ought to have listened to this program. Or I'm 41 and I'm thinking, you know, I've only got 20 more good years left in me. You may have 50 more good years left in you.
You know something? The last place you're ever going to find me on is sitting around all day long on a golf course. I don't like golf anyway. I'd rather climb a mountain. And just live a life that's all about me-centric. I'm sorry. It doesn't work. I just feel differently like you do. Both of us are of service. We keep teaching. We keep doing our thing. Everyone out there needs to step it up. I love that. And you heard it from Dr. Ken Dykewald, and literally one of the international stars of longevity and all things what happens after the age of 50 for all intent and purposes. Remember, his new book is What Retirees Want, a holistic view of life's third age. Learn about the third age. And you know something? If you have a parent out there, just grab this book and run with it. If you have anyone, I don't care what age they are, but especially after the age of 50, gift them with this book, because this book has such sage advice and wisdom. And listen, it's science-based. It's by one of the greatest scholars in this field. And I can't tell you, Ken, how honored and happy I am that you're on the Her podcast. Everyone, we've been talking to Dr. Ken Dykewald, my dear, dear friend, and literally one of the greatest minds in this field. So we've all been just transfixed, taking a lot of notes and definitely hitting Amazon and grabbing the book for sure. Ken, any last one little word of wisdom for everyone?
Yeah, I think that we'd all be better if we had a little more appreciation for interdependence. I think we've put a lot of focus these last 50 years on independence. I think if we're looking out for our neighbors a little bit more and we're caring about people a little bit more, we're all better off.
I love it. Be of service. Be of service. There's absolutely no question. Just be there for people. That connection, and as a physician, I can tell you right now, I have a mountain of science that says connections are one of the best things you can do to be able to live long and live well. How about that health span? Thank you so much, Ken. And everyone out there, please take a minute to hit iTunes right now and rate and review the show, because I want to hear from you, because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek, Twitter at Pam Peek MD, or Instagram at Pam Peek MD. Remember to catch every episode of the Her podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. Please stay safe and stay well.